Part 4. I'll Take You Back. Chapter 10. Luminarias. I finally saw luminarias. At night, in the dark, as we pulled the car into the lot behind where Martha's Black Dog Cafe used to be. I had been to the plaza in the small town of Socorro before, but now it was very dark and my vision was limited in ways I might not be aware of until I actually confronted them. Until I got outside and began to walk in the blackness among the small lights. From the car, I saw a row of glowing candles and brown paper bags lining the sidewalks of a narrow street. I was excited. I had not been sure I would be able to see these glowing bags on the ground in the night. Their light was muted compared with the brightness of electric Christmas lights. But there were so many, and they were festive. Ahead, they seemed to dot the park-like plaza, spreading along winding paths, rising on steps and on the gentle slope of a hill. They glowed from side streets in front of illuminated stores surrounding the square plaza. Music wafted from somewhere. People walked about. I was happy. Hannah and I were on a return trip to New Mexico. Each winter, when we have visited in recent years, I try to figure out what is happening to my sight. The stark desert landscape, the vast sweeps, the unfamiliar places, particularly at night, all call attention to my vision in ways I later reflect upon. I hoped this trip, like the one we took 2 years ago when Tila was first with me, would be special. At the same time, I feared that either my eyesight would fail me more completely, or the world would somehow fail me and suddenly grow dim. No bright spots, no new adventures, no uplifting experiences or final satisfactions. That night I spent wandering among the luminarias has become for me much more than a memory of small bags of light glowing beautifully in the darkness, and a testament to the transitory nature of my sight. It is a recognition of the art that goes into seeing, a picture as well of my inner hesitance, my self-consciousness and self-doubts, a picture of the detailed efforts it takes me to comprehend how to move safely and with assistance. A picture especially of the work required to reconcile how I am looked at by others with how, in turn, I must look at myself. A picture of the thought processes that go into learning to step carefully and into recognizing what I see and allowing myself to enjoy it. Life slows down when one is blind. Pictures take time to compose. Small moments assume great importance when new sight is needed. My night among the luminarias marked the beginning of a trip of return and recovery during which I would confront the many ambiguities of my blindness, seeking new resolutions. On that cool December evening, as the luminarias on a small town plaza beckoned me to come close, challenging me to see them again, and to see them differently, I tried to grasp what I could find in their light. When Hannah, Tila, and I arrived at the festive plaza, it was not even Christmas yet. 2 weeks before, but the town was having its celebration. I pointed to what I thought was a parking space as Hannah pulled the car into the dark lot. "That's not a space," she said to me, "but there's one over there." Hannah is always saying things like that, telling me that something I think I recognize is actually something else. She tells me gently, not reprimanding me, but with a kind of guidance, lest I be mistaken and forever have a wrong image in my mind. She parked and turned off the car engine. I got out and came around to the back door to let Tila out and to put on my gloves and scarf to keep off the cold. I thought about taking my camera because I wanted to have pictures of the luminarias glowing with their strange, delicate brightness, but I decided against it, since this was only my first sighting of luminarias on this trip and surely there would be more. As it turned out, this was the best sighting. More candles, close to me, spread around so I could walk among them. There would never again be an opportunity to take this same picture. But I did not know that on this night. I assumed magical displays of lights would be everywhere. It's that way with magic and with sight. You know you've had it only when it's gone. Now I only have this picture in my mind. A dark background aglow with small square lights and me walking among them, starting and stopping, looking down to take each lantern in, to be sure they were there, to remember them. Leaving the car, I began to walk forward quickly with Tila to look closely at the first luminaria I saw. Then I started to trip, stumbling on a crack in the sidewalk I had not seen in the dark. "Slow down," Hannah called to me from behind. As I looked at the candle nestled in sand within the luminaria at my feet and up at the glimmering lights ahead on the plaza, I missed my camera. I thought about going back for it, but I had not yet loaded the film. I also thought it would look strange, a woman wearing glasses, being led by a guide dog, stopping here and there in the dark to look through a lens, taking pictures that might flash, getting down close to the ground to stare into the small bags of light. If I had taken my camera, I would have those pictures I now desire. But I am self-conscious, already feeling enough of a public spectacle. People look at me because I am with a guide dog. I did not want to call further attention to myself. Later that evening, as we walked up close to children singing in the far end of the plaza, I saw a man with a camera taking pictures of his kids. I could be taking pictures too, I thought. His camera in the dark did not look strange. But of course, I was overlooking the fact that if I peered through my camera lens in the night, I would not see much, if anything at all. The camera makes visual images darker and small, and I am not adept at nighttime photography. So I am left with images without film, images in my mind, images detailed perhaps all the more precisely because I have no external visual record of them, and perhaps also because I now have less skill with my eyes than with my words. I have grown more desirous of creating my own pictures since I have begun to lose my vision, more intent on keeping my images and more fearful of losing them. The last time we visited the town of Socorro was a year ago on Christmas Eve. The year before that, I had taken delight in seeing electric Christmas lights while driving around this town, and I had longed to see luminarias, not the plastic kind, but the real ones, usually set out only on Christmas Eve. Hannah had said, "I'll take you to see them next time." And she had. It had snowed last year, so the little bags sat on the plaza in the scattered whiteness of the snow, the ice glinting all around them. They looked picturesque. I was touched that Hannah took me to see them, but also disappointed because the candlelit bags looked dim to me, less striking than I had expected. Because the weather was bitter cold last year, I did not stay outside for long, walking among the small lanterns. I got back in the car and we drove around the edges of the plaza, peering at them. Through the tinted car windows, the luminarias looked even more faded, and farther away, they were harder for me to see. Hannah then drove us up a road that climbed the side of the mountain behind the plaza, so I could view luminarias lining houses and yards there, and perhaps see them better. She pointed out to me that the mountain in the background was white and covered with snow and that above it was a sliver of a moon, but I could not see the snow on the mountain or the moon in the distance, and the luminarias around the homes looked dim there too. Since I had been disappointed last year, this year I prepared myself. I planned to get as close to the candlelit bags as I could and to give myself many possibilities to see them on our trip. I wanted to take my disappointment and convert it to a satisfaction. Maybe I would light some luminarias of my own or stand close and watch people putting them out in front of their homes. I had called the local Chamber of Commerce to ask if there would be a luminaria display before Christmas, and now here we were. Among the lights. I began to walk quickly forward with Hannah, Tila guiding me toward the excitement ahead on the plaza. We passed lighted storefronts, warmth emanating from inside them, with pictures hanging on their walls. This night was a combination arts and crafts crawl and luminaria display. The stores stayed open late, featuring works of local artists. Walking down the street, we stopped first into a bicycle shop that displayed crafted woodwork and framed photos, with refreshments set out on a table inside. Someone recommended the black bean salsa dip, and I had some, a first taste of the red chili flavors I so like. I switched Tila's leash to my left hand so I could reach for a corn chip and sample the smoky-flavored dip, which made Tila start to get excited and move around, so I quickly shoved the food in my mouth and switched her back. "Would you like some wine?" Hannah asked. I did, but I was afraid I would not be able to juggle it well while holding Tila. And what if I got drunk and began to weave on my feet as I walked with her in the dark among the luminarias? I couldn't risk it. I had some more salsa and we headed back out into the cold. It was not bitter cold like last year, but cold enough to be in the spirit of the season, cold enough to make the shimmering bags of candlelight feel protective, these little fires all around threw a warmth disproportionate to their tiny size. Hannah stood with me at the curb in front of the bicycle shop before crossing the street to the plaza. "Be careful," she said. When we go across, there's going to be construction. There will be a rough area. Can you have Tila follow me? I was worried. I could not see the construction. I saw only the glow of the candles across the way in the dark, making flickering patterns dance in the part of the plaza nearest me. I shuddered. How could I follow Hannah if I had no idea, if I didn't quite understand what she was talking about? Was the construction in the street or across it? What exactly did it look like? How could I give directions to Tila if I could not see in the dark? And the thing is, that is why I have Tila and why I need warnings and directions, because I can't see. I can't know all the time what's there. Although I am prepared, I am often unprepared for my lack of sight, as if suddenly, out of nowhere, I will be lost. I turned to my dog. Ready, I said to Tila. Follow. We tagged after Hannah, close on her heels. On the other side of the street, I stepped forward. That's the pile of debris I was telling you about. Hannah stopped me. I still could not see it. Tell Tila to go around it, Hannah directed. I was thinking that Tila wanted to go forward into the grass on the plaza to make a beeline straight ahead, or that was my fear, that she wouldn't lead me properly. I tend not to trust, or not to trust at first. My blindness, my sudden loss of vision, throws me into an immediate state of panic until I gather my senses, figure out what to do, what the direction is, where to step, and exactly at what moment. I had been thinking for some time that navigating outdoors at night on this trip would be good for me. It would be good practice to be plunged into such darkness as I often avoid. I would have to trust Tila more than I must when I am out in familiar places in bright daylight. Back at home, I am often proud to find that I trust her at night more than I did at first. To stop at all the curbs, to take me around parked vehicles, to keep going straight when she should. On this trip, I would often be in unfamiliar territory at night. I would have to follow Tila in the darkness when I did not know where I was. I felt almost giddy with the adventure of it, with the luminarias shining everywhere, the paths among them not clear. I was not certain where the construction lay, where the steps went up, where walkways ended and the grass began. It would be a challenge to find my way through the maze of shimmering lights. I followed Tila cautiously at first, then a little more loosely, more freely. "You're going off into the grass," Hannah said. "Halt," I told Tila. She was generally good in following paths, but I would have to tell her which direction and be aware of changes in the texture of the ground beneath my steps. Almost as soon as we began walking, I wanted to stop to look down at the luminarias at my feet. I stood over one bag and then another and looked into the flickering candlelight beneath me. I knelt to get closer, and then I turned and aimed my sight at a line of luminarias stretching along a pathway. "Wait," I said to Hannah. "I want to see them." "There will be more," she said. I now stood and looked around in all directions. The lighted bags were everywhere. How could I take them all in? How remember? The farther luminarias seemed less bright to me than those closer, but I saw them, weaving in patterns on the ground. The bags were brown, but they looked golden. The streets bordering the square plaza had luminarias set out in front of the stores, lining the edges of the sidewalks, defining the perimeter of the plaza, itself crisscrossed with the tiny fires winding along the paths. The plaza looked like a tapestry made of threads of glowing filament, with stitching that stood out in small bunches here and there, igniting the scene with gold in the night. I wanted my camera. I looked around. How would I ever take a picture of this? I was sure I could, and unsure at the same time. And the picture I was thinking about, was it the image I might take with my camera, if only I had brought it, and if only I could see through the lens, or was it the picture I was now actually seeing with my surveying eyes? That picture was almost there, I felt. It was almost organized enough, but not quite, for it was marked by the absences and distortions of my impaired vision. Still, I saw the luminarias. There were enough of them to be bright enough for me, and I was close enough to touch them. Instead, though, I looked. I tried to organize the space, the pattern, the picture. That picture is blurrier in my mind now than I want it to be, and the lights in the distance seem so small, as if they are tiny and bright, but about to fade away, to get lost in the surrounding darkness. I fear I will lose them forever from my sight, that as time goes on, I won't retain this same picture. It's confusing. I see so much darkness, yet the small square lights stand out. As I gazed at the lighted bags on the plaza, I held my right hand up to my right eye and formed a circle with my thumb and forefinger, then looked through it, sighting along a row of the lights, moving the focus from one part of the park to another. I was trying to imitate a camera to see what I might see if I had brought one, hoping I would see better that way. The camera lens helps define a space, I have found, making a scene memorable. I wanted definition, something composed and bright, to stand out clearly forever. Why do those lights in the plaza now look so small in my mind? The whole scene keeps fading. I think they were larger when I saw them, though they were blurry, and even then, receding from my sight, fast becoming a memory. I stared into the candlelit darkness. "Where do you want to go next?" Hannah asked me. We were now standing at the upper end of the plaza near a gazebo where, on a raised platform, children were singing Christmas carols. "Let's listen to the singing," I said. We walked forward and stood close to the stage and listened as the children from an elementary school sang Rudolph and God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen in small, high, excited voices. Tila perked up her ears, having been remarkably patient during all my stopping to view the luminarias. Then a teacher stepped forward and introduced a new song made up by one of the children. "Stamp your feet for Hanukkah," the small voices began, and I thought about how Hannah and I were Jewish, standing there surrounded by Christmas and Christianity, and suddenly, just for us, they were singing a Hanukkah song. I was grateful because I had been worried that Hannah would feel alienated, and I wanted her to enjoy the event with me. When outnumbered, I tend to forget that I am Jewish, or I remember but become fearful of possible hostility. The singing helped. I smiled, but I still felt an irresolvable contradiction between Christmas and Hanukkah, much like the contradiction I sometimes felt between my sight and my blindness. These two very different worlds often seemed to threaten or to negate one another. In lighted storefronts. "Where do you want to go now?" Hannah asked as the singing ended. "Let's walk over to the stores." I followed her across the street, stepping carefully over a row of luminarias on the sidewalk after Tila stopped for me at the curb. "Let's go to the corner store," I said. "Are you sure you want to go there?" Hannah asked. The store seemed inviting to me because its windows shone brightly in the darkness, but it turned out to be a closed real estate office. Next door, a gift shop was open. I followed Hannah into the bright interior, aware that I had to be careful that Tila not bump me into the fragile imports on tables or knock them over with a sweep of her tail as she pulled me quickly through the aisles. I was seeing my surroundings oddly because I had to look hurriedly at the shelves as we passed them, and because I tend to see pieces of things close up best. A belly of a pottery vase loomed large as I sped by, then part of a hanging tin Christmas ornament, a portion of a woven design on a rug. In my disjointed vision, the objects and spaces in the store felt separated from each other and at confusing angles. I asked Hannah to tell me the colors of a Mexican rug I began to handle. "Purple, but cheap-looking," she said. The shop, with all its shapes and colors, felt fascinating but overwhelming. "Maybe another time I'll look more closely," I said to Hannah, feeling a small pang of loss as we left. I followed Hannah through an interior passageway to the store next door, a confection shop where cookies and drinks were set out on a table. Near the window, a woman displayed handmade silk scarves. Hannah held one up to me as Tila and I began to walk past her. "What color is it?" I asked. It was blue. I did not think I needed a scarf, and I wasn't sure about blue, but more importantly, I did not want to call attention to myself by stopping to try it on. Later, I wished I had. I rounded an aisle with Tila and heard a customer say to someone, "They have bizcochitos here, the small cinnamon and anise cookies that I like." I bought some, carefully balancing, making change, holding Tila's leash, and handling the two bags of treats, feeling I didn't quite have enough hands. Hannah offered to carry my bizcochitos, but I wanted to keep them from cracking and to carry them myself, so I put them in my shoulder bag. So often, Hannah and I have moments like that when she offers to help me, but I reject the help, wanting to know I can do a task myself, needing to feel capable. We stepped outside and back into the cold, then into another building, a financial office of some sort with impressive paintings on the walls, many of them large, bright scenes that I could see. I marveled at them. I stood with Tila at my side, a dog signifying I am blind, staring at these colorful artworks and wondering what other people saw when they looked at me. Did they wonder why I was standing here taking delight in these pictures if I had a guide dog because I couldn't see? I was thrown back suddenly into my inner place of self-doubt, as if the very brightness of the shop called it forth. I felt less protected here than when I had been outside walking in the plaza in the darkness. There, I could see less and others could see me less well, but in this bright shop, I could be seen and, I feared, judged. I stepped over to look at a small painting on a side wall. Then I walked up to a very large and brightly colored picture of a landscape and stood before it for a longer time. I hoped that people would think it made sense that I could see this painting because it was big. Then I would not be viewed as seeing too much for a blind person. I felt caught between hiding my vision and wanting to enjoy it, between seeing what I could and wondering what I was missing. Reluctantly, I left the vibrant paintings and we stepped outside. The next shop was a beauty parlor with a row of empty chairs, huge transparent hairdryer domes on top of each, sitting ready as if waiting for non-existent customers. Beside the chairs, a mirrored wall reflected an eerie, half-dim nighttime light. Just inside the front doorway, a long table with a bright lamp above it was spread with artful handcrafted pottery, plates, bowls, mugs, goblets, a vase. The potter, a woman, was standing behind the table. On a smaller table to the side, she had set out a large vat of pozole. Hannah spooned a bowl of the stew for me. It was warm and tasted wonderfully spicy from the red chili. As I stood sipping it, I hoped Tila would stay calm and not suddenly startle me so that I'd spill it. "Would you like me to hold her for a moment?" Hannah asked. "I can manage," I said instinctively. Then I took her up on her offer, giving her the leash. "Maybe for a minute, so I can look at the pottery." At the display table, I stood looking down at the bowls and cups, which I liked and wanted to handle. I began touching them to feel the textures and the shapes, but I also hoped I might feel the colors. The outsides of the bowls and the mugs looked black to me, though possibly brown with tan inside. I asked the potter to describe the colors for me. "They're earth tones," she said. "The outside of the bowl you're holding is brown. The center is a deep rose." I picked up a vase and felt its oval-shaped belly. I picked up a goblet. "That has a brighter rose inside," the potter said. I fingered the central area of a low sculpted serving bowl. "That's almost a purple. It has more blue." I was surprised that I had thought so many of the interior colors were tan. I liked that they were earth tones. I wondered if I had actually seen the rose colors the potter described, or if I only had seen the tans and browns and imagined the others. I looked closely at each ceramic piece as she described it to me, straining to see, holding the bowl up to the overhead lamp to try to make the light glint off the glaze so I could see the color. Suddenly, there it was, a shade of rose deep within the bowl, a brighter rose lining the goblet. The exterior glaze that I had thought at first was black looked definitely brown in these varying lights. I touched the colors all the more thoughtfully, still trying to feel them. "Would you like to buy one?" Hannah asked. "No," I said, thinking of the fragility of the pieces and how I wasn't really fond of rose. Everything seemed fragile. The pottery, like my vision, was so fragile and temporary. We left the pottery in the beauty shop and headed toward the nearby plaza bar, on sidewalks lined with luminarias, the crosswalk also lined with the glowing lights. No traffic was allowed tonight on this portion of the narrow street that circled the plaza. I walked beside Hannah, following Tila, taking in the excitement of the night. Luminarias stood at the open door to the bar. Electric Christmas lights hung on the walls inside. We stopped in briefly, but the bar was empty, the night early, the smell of beer lingered in the darkness. As we left, I wondered what lay further inside the bar's back room. Hannah had taken a quick look, but I never saw it. Yet, oddly, that room stays with me as if I had seen it, a dark interior space with tables around a wooden floor beckoning me to enter. Farther down the street, as we stood at a curb ready to cross to lighted stores on the other side, a horse-drawn carriage began passing by in front of us. "Be careful when we go across," Hannah cautioned me. "There's horse shit in the street." Again, I thought about what I could not see. I didn't know exactly where the horse shit would be, so I instructed Tila to follow Hannah's footsteps closely, hoping that the difference between Hannah's steps and mine would not be too great. "Am I okay?" I asked her. "You're doing fine. Step to your left a little. We're almost there." On the other side of the street, we entered a storefront, formerly a pharmacy, but now the local chamber of commerce. Amid tables laid with refreshments and chamber literature, a group of people stood around chatting. Framed paintings, photos, and drawings hung on the walls. These pictures were smaller than those in the financial office. I would have to go up close to the walls to see them, but the tables blocked the way and the pictures were placed high up, too far for me to make them out. As I pondered what to do, a woman came over and greeted me, saying she recognized me from a previous visit. I wondered if it was me she recognized, or Tila. As she began talking, I enviously eyed the walls of inaccessible pictures. "Can you go over and look at them for me?" I asked Hannah later. "Tell me if there's anything you think I would like, or if you particularly like something, you could describe it to me." Hannah went up nearer to the walls and looked at the artworks. "They're nice," she said, coming back, "but you're not missing anything." Still, I felt I had missed. Maybe if I had gone up to the walls myself, I kept thinking, there it would be, the perfect picture, my picture, something beautiful and delicate, yet bold enough for me to see, that I could delight in. "I want to walk around in the lights some more," I said to Hannah as we left the chamber storefront and crossed back over to the plaza. "Remember the construction," she cautioned. I suddenly stumbled into it before Tila could stop me. We turned right and walked along a winding path toward a less populated area of the plaza where the walkways seemed wider, rambling off to quieter streets. I looked at the luminarias at my feet and around at the whole scene. I wanted to go down every path, inspect every one of the small lanterns. I did not want to leave without meeting each candlelit bag. At one point, with a bright street light overhead, I could finally see a pile of the construction debris that Hannah had described to me. "We're crossing a side street," she said a moment later, "but it's closed off." I was surprised that I had not noticed that we had stepped off the plaza into the side street, that I wasn't able to distinguish a street from a path. Both were surrounded by luminarias. "It's so pretty," I said to Hannah. Just then, on our stroll, we met some people we knew who had already heard we were in town from the woman in the Chamber of Commerce. "Isn't small-town life great?" the man said, welcoming us. I knew I liked to go to small towns. The difference, the change from home, the quietness pleased me. Maybe for a blind person it would be okay to live in a small town, I began thinking. But the transportation could be difficult. People relied more on cars. I knew Hannah worried about that, but I'd always thought I could do it. I could make the adjustments. Blind people live everywhere. People would know me. I would walk with Tila. Then I worried, what if I got bored? The art gallery. I stepped up a curb following Tila onto a well-lit brick sidewalk and opened the door of a shop ahead. Music played inside, the strings of a mandolin. This was the town art gallery, lively with people, abuzz with light and sound. Hannah and I had been to a party here 2 years ago, and that occasion now merged in my mind with this one. I could see somewhat better now than I had last time, when cataracts had made my vision darker and more blurry. 2 years ago, I had just come home with Tila, so I was very self-conscious and proud. How should I stand in a gathering with a dog? I had wondered. Should I take off my coat? How did I look? What should I do if people started to pet Tila? I did not want to seem unfriendly. I remember that one man I knew came up to me and put his face close to mine and said, "Susan, it's Peter." I was glad because I would not have recognized him otherwise. As I looked around now, I had many of these same concerns. Although I saw better than before, My vision remained fuzzy, with pieces missing and dark shadows interfering with the images before me. The glare from the lights overhead blurred my surroundings, and I could not focus well enough to keep track of the people moving about. I was relieved that my vision was not perfect, not a night and day change from before, for I had become used to my lack of sight. I knew I had to be on my toes and aware. I had to look directly at objects, at people, or parts of people, and parts of the room, to get a sense of seeing them. I could not sweep with my gaze as I imagined I used to back when I had normal sight. I was aware that I had to take extra time to work at seeing in the overwhelming busyness of the gallery, filling in and compensating for the missing pieces, creating a pleasing portrait, guessing at what objects were. This was my art now, I thought, as I focused on looking about, seeing neither as I had before, nor as everyone else did. I was constantly composing, in my mind, the images I saw only partially with my eyes, so that they would not seem confused, but would make sense, and so the world would feel hospitable to me. The glare in the brick-walled gallery was everywhere, jumping off all the surfaces, streaking the air with waves of milky light. I was worried about my blind spots jeopardizing my movements. I stood still so that I would not back into people or bump into the sculptures on display in the middle of the room that I might not see. If I moved, I thought, I would have to gauge whether there was enough room for both Tila and me. I wasn't sure, so I thought I would let other people come up to me. Someone did. A woman who had read my last book came over and said she liked it. That pleased me. I saw several women standing beside a table next to the front door. They seemed familiar, but I couldn't quite tell. Maybe I had seen them the year of the earlier party, but my vision was not clear then, and it wasn't clear now. It was a fuzzy recollection of something that had been even fuzzier. I thought perhaps I should go up and say hello to the women. I had a feeling I was being looked at by them, but I didn't move. I wasn't sure who was who, so I thought I would wait. Blind people always wait. I have told myself many times as I wait for buses or a ride or for something to happen or to make sure of what I see or size up a new place. I've told myself, it's normal, blind people wait more. I have found that thought helps me be patient. At an event like this gallery open house, it was reassuring for me to feel that waiting was okay. I did not have to go directly up to people and be social. I also did not go up to the walls and look at the pictures, which surprised me. Here I was in an art gallery and I wasn't looking at the art. I assumed people would understand, thinking I could not see well enough. But I did not go up to the pictures, in part, because the gallery, though beautiful with all its colorful art, felt like both an obstacle course and a fishbowl. There was no direct path among the sculptures. I would have to make my way with Tila in narrow spaces, possibly bumping into people or knocking them with the bag that hung from my back with the bizcochitos puffing it out. I would then have to put my face up close to the pictures, and someone would come and ask what I was doing. Not wanting the attention, instead I stood. I put my hand out toward a black metal sculpture near me to touch it, but then I drew my hand back, afraid the metal could have sharp edges and I'd cut myself. I told Tila to sit. I felt less alone here with her. Hannah was off looking at the paintings in an adjoining room. I thought it might look better if I touched some of the sculptures, but still I did not. Then I noticed the musicians getting ready to play. That would be nice, I thought. Folk or bluegrass music? It did not involve moving or seeing. It would take the focus away from me, and Hannah would like it. Hannah was invited upstairs to see the studios of several of the artists. The main artist, a woman we had met before, said there was a spiral staircase going up to a loft area. I knew I would be unsure of my steps on a spiral staircase with Tila, my limited sight, and my height fright, so I declined. I walked over to a shelf near the front door and picked up a brightly colored guide to art galleries in the area. Maybe Hannah and I would use it later in our travels. I could take out my lighted magnifier and look at the colored pictures in it. I slipped the guidebook into my bag, then Tila and I stepped back into the center of the room and stood beside a huge horse. The horse, a sculpture, was almost life-sized, about the size of a pony, and painted with soft-toned rainbow colors. Its back was arched, its tail up, its head thrown to the side in abandon. I knew this horse from our visit here before, and it felt like an old friend. I stood in the middle of the room beside it, surrounded by smaller sculptures on pedestals and behind them by the paintings on the walls. To the side of the room where the musicians stood were tables with refreshments. I wanted a drink, but I didn't move. Someone offered me wine, but I declined, thinking if I wanted it, I should get it myself, wishing not to sacrifice a sense of my own competence in this wonderful yet confusing space, thinking, too, what would I do if while I was holding my glass, Tila started to bolt? I felt lost in my surroundings now in the brightness of the room, which made artworks and people blur together. Outside, the luminarias stood out individually in the darkness and seemed more defined. I yearned for the comfort of that lesser light. The artist who had painted the horse came downstairs with Hannah. I knew that she and her partner were lesbians, and I wondered how many other lesbians were here, and if the other artists whose work Hannah had seen upstairs were lesbian. Probably not, I thought. A woman standing by the doorway looked familiar to me. I hoped she was a lesbian, but she looked straight. They all did. Although perhaps I could not see the subtle clues that would lead me to make a distinction. The presence or lack of makeup, the way a woman smiled, a direct look to her eyes. Still, I would see the big clues, I thought, such as a defiant stance or a very butch haircut. At the party here 2 years ago, there had been a small group of lesbians present, women whom I knew were lesbian because we had been introduced in a friend's home earlier. But I would not have known by looking, and it was not necessarily because of my eyesight. This was a place where the women looked straight. I probably looked like a lesbian, though I wasn't sure. I felt like a statue standing here in the middle of the art. A statue of a lesbian, blind but with glasses, accompanied by a golden dog, self-conscious, smiling occasionally. I hoped that if I smiled, it would disarm all objections. I was nervous now and tired from standing. This open house was not as exciting as the more intimate party had been that last time. But it was a check-in for me, an occasion that caused me to ask, who am I now, and how am I going to deal with it? I felt poised, as if on the verge of an answer. We left the art gallery that evening, stepping outside, Hannah and I intent on our privacy, and we talked about who, if anyone, was a lesbian, how people were doing, what the pictures were like, and where we might go for dinner. As we walked back over to the plaza, I was glad to see it was still lit with the many luminarias. I was reminded of how, the year before when we came here, I actually took a few pictures. I am still not sure how I saw through the camera, but the flash went off and I took them. One, in particular, has great meaning for me. I must have been standing below an overhead lamp or very close to the luminaria to see through the lens. So what I have is a photo of a luminaria seen close up. In the background is snow on the ground, a bare mesquite bush, and a bench. The flash has gone off, so it's not a picture of a golden glow in the dark, but of the entire bag reflecting the light of the flash and the candle glinting within. The outlines are amazingly clear when I put the photo under my magnifier. The bright bag is toward the center of the picture. I see it in my mind better than what I actually saw that night, perhaps because I was busy trying to take pictures with a camera. Or maybe I didn't see that luminaria as well in person as when I looked at it in the photo later. I was glad that tonight the milder weather meant I could walk among the luminarias for a longer time, step slowly and look down and see them, perhaps because I had been disappointed last year and because this time I prepared myself for dim lights. All that I had seen tonight felt like a gain. A brightness I had not expected would be so bright, the lights so plentiful. There seemed to be more luminarias on the plaza this year, definitely more on the streets surrounding it, sending forth a glow, and they were ringed with art, with bright pictures and weavings in the stores. And the buzz of people looking at the displays lent a legitimacy to my focus on my own sight. I felt exquisitely aware as I moved around in the darkness of the plaza, looking at the glowing bags of light, and then curious as I came out into each brightened storefront. It was a special night. I did not have my camera, but I kept trying to take pictures. Of the chairs in the beauty shop sitting empty in the night with their plastic domes on top, waiting for the next drying job. For the invisible people who would arrive the next day when the beauty shop certainly would be open. Though gone would be the pottery and the red chili pozole. Gone as swiftly as my walk around the plaza. I wanted to hold on to my sense of what it had been like, to hear again the children singing, taste the black bean salsa dip, feel the colors on the pottery. step carefully once more over invisible horse shit, I looked into the darkness and yearned to stay longer. This has been a story of some of the lights I saw on a small town plaza one night, never perhaps to see them quite the same way again. I have tried to create the pictures I did not take with my camera, this picture in words of how it felt and what I saw as I moved between darkness and light, seeking self-acceptance and trying to keep images from fading from my view, this memory of a dazzling array of glowing paper bags shining more brightly in the night than I ever expected reminds me of my desire to enjoy both the fleeting moments of light and the longer nighttime darkness. Especially, this memory of my night among the luminarias represents a gift from Hannah, a gift of patience, of taking me back, of braving Christmas and giving guidance and instruction, asking where I want to go next. I am often so lost in a sense of my own separateness, increased now by my blindness, that I forget that I am not alone. I am sharing the path, the adventure, the meandering walk, holding a leather leash and grasping a harness, Tila in front of me, Hannah by my side. It takes three of us now. Tila led as we headed up the sidewalk lined with luminarias, walking toward the parking lot, back to the car.